MacCast, Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Hope you're having a great week, enjoying yourself. I am looking over the show notes today, and we've got some fun things to talk about. Of course, last week we had Apple's iPhone event, and since then we've had ordering of iPhones, if you're planning on getting a new one. I myself am, so we'll talk about that a little bit. We're also going to jump in the news and get into what I like to call some of the iPhone event aftermath. So we have the buildup, we get all the rumors, then we find out actually what Apple has announced, and then after that, we start to get a little tidbits and details that Apple didn't cover, or more information comes out about the products. So we got a bunch of that stuff in the news this week. We're also going to talk about the iPhone 11 and the iPhone XR, and how at least one analyst feels those products, specifically the XR, saved Apple. We'll get into a small change in policy on the App Store related to billing and subscriptions. Going to dig into some Apple TV Plus stuff, including some new shows and just general news and things like that. And then we will talk about what's next for Apple. There's a bit more information, actually a leaked image of a potential new iPad, and that will probably round out the news for this week. And then I'll share with you my experience in ordering my next iPhone, talk about how that process went and what I am going to be picking up. And then I want to get back into some Apple TV stuff that we've talked about here in the past on the MacCast, specifically related to the app. But I received an email from a listener this week that just sort of brought that back to the forefront. So I want to get back into that, just get your thoughts and opinions on it. And then we'll round out the show with Apple Arcade. Yep, I've had a chance to take a look at some things, and I'm going to share some of my early thoughts and opinions with you on that. And that should round out this episode of the MacCast. So I don't want to waste any more time. Let's just jump right in and get to it. So iPhone event, it was great. We covered it on the last episode of the MacCast. Now we're finding out a little bit more details about some of the things that Apple talked about. So I wanted to get into some of those, starting off with Apple TV Plus, because this was actually a question I had as well. And it looks like we might have an answer. I believe I read this over at iMore. And that question was, if Apple is giving us a free year of Apple TV Plus with the purchase of a device, and that is a family plan, does that mean if more than one person in your family buys a new Apple device that you get extra years or more free Apple TV? And it turns out the answer is no. Apple TV Plus, you get one free year per family, no stacking, no banking. After that first year, of course, it auto-renews at $4.99 a month. And I think that also answers the question. The other question I had is, in a year, if I buy a new iPhone, do I get another year? And I have a feeling this is going to be a one-time, one-free year per person, per family, however it might work out. So it's looking like that is going to be the case. We got a little more information about the iPhone 11 and maybe what you might find inside of it. You might remember one of the things that was rumored was that the iPhone 11 and 11 Pros were going to have bilateral wireless charging. So you'd be able to do something like set your AirPods on your iPhone and they would get charged up, or you could even potentially charge another iPhone or your Apple Watch, however that might be. That was something that Apple did not announce. It was rumored to be happening. Well, famed Apple leaker Sonny Dixon said this week in a tweet that his sources say the iPhone 11 and the iPhone 11 Pros actually do have the bilateral charging hardware in them, but Apple disabled it in software at the last minute. And you may remember Ming-Chi Kuo had also said that Apple had canceled this feature, possibly because the charging efficiency did not meet Apple's requirements. Now, there's no confirmation on this. This is just a rumor at this point, but we should find out this Friday when the iPhones start shipping and iFixit does their teardown if this is really the case. And that could bring up something very interesting, in my opinion, because potentially Apple could re-enable it. If this was simply a software thing and not a hardware issue, they might be able to work that out and at some point re-enable this feature if the hardware is in there and it doesn't require any changes. Now, that's a lot of ifs, but interesting nonetheless. And we have seen Apple occasionally enable features on products after they've actually shipped. So there is a little bit of precedence for this. I'm not going to hold my breath, but an interesting revelation nonetheless. It's also not a surprise that we're hearing that internally the modems in the iPhone 11 series, they are from Intel. They are Intel Gigabit LTE modems. We weren't expecting that Apple would have Qualcomm ones in there because they just settled that dispute with Qualcomm this year, and there would not have been enough time to get those parts. Now, in the past, Apple did a mix of some Intel and some Qualcomm modems. Looking like this year, all of the devices are going to have that Gigabit LTE modem from Intel. It is their latest and last version of a modem that they did. And as Apple said in the announcements, it should offer about up to a 20% increase in LTE speeds. So there you have it. There's an Intel modem in there. I don't know if there's much more to say about it than that. We're also hearing a little bit more about the batteries. The batteries do appear to be bigger, up to 20 to 25% larger on the iPhone Pro models. We had already heard that the iPhone Pros were just slightly thicker than the iPhone X series or XS series models that they're replacing. And we're also hearing that the Max still has an L-shaped battery, but it looks a little bit different. There was a leaked image of it, and rather than showing two distinct cells, it looks all like one cell. And that could mean that it is a single cell, but it also could mean they've just kind of put a new wrapper over it so you can't really see the seam between the two separate batteries. But again, we'll probably find out for sure once iFixit does their teardown. So expect more on that later. We also got some indication because there was some debate on whether or not this year's iPhones had 4 gigabytes or 6 gigabytes of RAM, or maybe the 11 had 4 gigs and the Pros were going to have 6 gigs. Well, early Geekbench scores seem to indicate that that this year's iPhones, all of them, the 11 all the way through the 11 Pros, will have 4 gigabytes of RAM. So it's going to be consistent across the line, which is a little bit different than it has been in the past. And it just, again, proves that the iPhone 11 is a really good value. I mean, beside the cameras internally, it is pretty much the same phone. Well, and the screen, of course. But that, again, as we've talked about in the past on the MacCast, that liquid retina display, that LCD, is really, really nice. I personally, again, going into an Apple store with the iPhone XS and the iPhone XR, putting them side by side, I had a hard time distinguishing between the two screens in terms of, you know, overall brightness, contrast, all those sorts of things. About the only thing you could tell was that the OLED did have slightly deeper blacks, but I mean, it was neck and neck. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, I think the iPhone 11 is the phone this year for most people, unless you really, really just care about those high-end features that are in the Pros. But you look at the price difference, and I think this was the same thing as it was last year when Apple brought out the XR. It's really hard to justify for most people. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that iPhone XR coming up here a little bit later in the show. Apple did cause a little bit of confusion last week, too, when it put up the tech specs for the Series 5 Apple Watch, specifically the titanium model, because it showed that it was the same weight as the stainless steel. In a different place on its website, it said it was actually 45% lighter. Turns out, both of those specs, wrong. Apple had made a mistake. They did correct it on the website, and it is lighter, the titanium model, but not by 45%. Just a little bit lighter. Also, we're getting details on the Apple Watch CPU. It's looking like, again, from some early benchmarking scores, that it is the same S4 chip that is in the Series 4. Apple did not talk about this too much, but we are hearing from early reviews and from other information that it looks like this Series 5, just like we thought, is just really a minor update. About the biggest enhancement here is the always-on display. Battery life remains the same. All the other tech specs remain the same. Of course, you've got the compass in there, which is a new feature. So if you don't really care about those two features and you have a relatively recent Apple Watch, say a Series 4 or a Series 3, there's probably not a lot of reason to upgrade. Series 2 owners, I think, would get a very nice upgrade. And again, it's just going to depend on how much you use your Apple Watch. So, you know, I'm not saying that the Series 5 isn't a great watch. I think it is. There's no doubt it's the best smartwatch on the planet right now that you can buy, but I don't think a lot of people are going to have upgrader's remorse if they don't upgrade to a Series 5. Apple TV Plus is going to end up being a great value in India. Just 99 rupees a month, or about $1.40. So we thought $4.99 was a great deal. India, you're getting an even better deal. About the only way you're not getting a better deal is you're only going to get a 7-day free trial as opposed to a month in other markets. But who cares when you're paying a much reduced price? And sounds like Apple is being very sensitive to the fact that this is an international rollout of Apple TV, and looks like they're willing to adjust pricing to match the market that the service is going into. And I think that's ultimately a good thing, and I fully expect that we'll hear of other pricing that is reduced in other markets. The question remains, will we hear of more expensive pricing? I'm going to guess not, unless it's factoring in just the exchange rate, but we'll keep an eye on it and let you know. Oftentimes when Apple updates their phones, we're talking a lot about the A series processor and all the new features of it. Apple actually did a pretty good job in the keynote into going into all the improvements in the A13. They had that great engineer, I will just say now, my favorite Apple presenter ever, up on stage, just making all of the reporters' eyes gloss over in the audience. I don't think anybody really knew what he was talking about, but what I loved about him was you could tell he had such a passion for his chip design and how it worked, and being able to explain it in front of an audience like that just looked like he was thrilled. So I enjoyed that part of the keynote. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to watch it. He does a really pretty good job of putting it into, you know, pretty plain terms. Point at the end of the day, though, is, you know, the too long didn't read part of it is, this is a super efficient chip, and they did some amazing things to make that happen. So oftentimes, again, at these announcements, we're talking about the A-series processor. This year, there was another processor that Apple has, or another chip that Apple has in there, the U1 chip, not a processor, but the wireless chip, the ultra-wideband chip. And we're starting to hear that while Apple doesn't have a lot of plans for it in the early releases of iOS 13. Really, it's going to just be used for AirDrop, and we talked about how on the last episode of the MacCast, basically you can pinpoint other AirDrop users by sort of pointing your phone at them, and then they will show up at the top of your AirDrop list. Yeah, that's a cool feature, but turns out this chip can do a whole lot more, and we're finding out a little bit more about it. It can actually detect items down to an accuracy of 10 centimeters by default. And actually, if you fine tune it even more, it can get down to an accuracy of about 5 millimeters. That is pretty great at locating stuff. So imagine the applications for like augmented reality, for indoor mapping, all of these sorts of things, not just finding stuff, but finding stuff really, really well. Another thing that it does is the ultra wideband uses time of flight to do its calculations. That's how it can do its accuracy in terms of coming up with distance. And that's why it's improved over what you can do with Bluetooth, which basically just relies on the strength of the signal. Not only that, but ultra wideband uses directional antennas, so it can detect not only the distance, but also the direction that that signal is coming from, including the angle. And that's why it's really helpful in helping you find your devices. Now, as far as transfer speeds go, it, you know, it's not breaking any speed records, 27 megabits per second, but that is faster than low energy Bluetooth. And I think with AirDrop, actually, Apple just uses the technology to establish, you know, the connection or where the device is. But then when you actually start the transfer, you know, it's more like the handshake. And then when you do the transfer, it switches over to Wi-Fi, which is much, much faster. But the point is, this chip has a lot of potential applications. And I really have high hopes that it is something that's going to be opened up wide open to developers. I talked about this a little bit on the iOS show, but I've had a lot of ideas over the years for different applications and even games that would rely on this kind of directional, distance-based locating of other devices. One idea I had years ago was for a multi-phone, multiplayer version of Pong, where if you had a bunch of iPhones around, you could actually angle your paddle toward another phone, and when it bounced the ball would go off your screen at one angle and come into the person in that area's screen at the same angle. So you could kind of stick four phones kind of near each other together, four, five, six. You could have a bunch in a circle, and you could play this really cool game of Pong. And I could see this kind of technology opening up something like that. I also thought about a note passing app for students where you could actually flick the note toward the person that you were trying to send the note to, and it would be able to detect and know which phone it was supposed to go to. That could get a little bit dangerous in terms of intercepting. Security might be an issue, but maybe you could build in some encryption or something like that. But you get the idea. It's like being able to accurately detect where another phone or another device or something is has a lot of potential, and I think developers could come up with some really creative stuff. So it's interesting to hear about this ultra wideband U1 chip, and actually Apple is the first company to put this kind of chip into a commercial product, and the iPhone 11 is going to be the first thing to have it. So that's a pretty cool little enhancement. And if you can't tell, I am pretty excited about the iPhone 11, and I don't think I'm the only one. Ming-Chi Kuo says he expects demand to be very good. He thinks it's ahead of expectations based on early online shipping estimates following pre-orders. In the U.S., the iPhone 11 Pro seems to be the most popular model, outselling the iPhone 11, but only by a few percentage points. I think he said 54% of the sales going to iPhone 11 Pro series, and that would be the Pro and the Pro Max, obviously. The reverse, though, seems to be true in more price-sensitive areas like China. They're going for the iPhone 11. The one thing that does seem to be universal, though, is that folks are going for the new colors. The midnight green, the green and the purple in the iPhone 11 seem to be the most popular colors. Unfortunately, with the midnight green, Ming-Chi Kuo says they're having some production problems with that color and the glass, and it is keeping the supply constrained. And anybody who tried to order an iPhone 11 in the midnight green or 11 Pro in midnight green is probably aware of that. That was one of the first models to sell out. Sold out very quickly, and it is on longer back order. I also just think anytime a new color comes out, that is the most popular color. That is the thing everybody wants, especially early adopters who are buying right away. That'll all sort itself out. Ming-Chi Kuo does say sales are likely being helped by the trade-ins, Apple giving some healthy amounts on trade-ins, although, and I'll still point out, you can often get a better deal selling it yourself on the secondary market. Some MacCast listeners emailed in to me and said, yeah, basically Apple's offering about, you know, 50% of the value of the device, roughly, and you can definitely get more for that if you're willing to put in the time and maybe sell it yourself somewhere like on eBay or do a private sale. But, you know, how I feel about that is sometimes the convenience is just worth it. You know, if you want to trade in with Apple, you get money off your new phone and you're not so worried about how much money. You're more just interested in having that be an easy transaction. And Apple certainly does make that easy. Also, the zero interest payment plans are, again, helping to sell phones, although they did have those plans last year. So how much that is a factor in this year's what seems like higher demand remains to be seen. I think this year's higher demand also comes into play because, especially on the top end, you have a new camera system. And I think that is one of the key features that a lot of people want in their phone. So when they see really big camera upgrades, that tends to be the upgrade that they go for. I think also timing is playing a factor in here. I think there were a lot of people who didn't upgrade to the XS, and now another year later, they're willing to jump in and do that upgrade. Consequently, Ming-Chi Kuo raised his estimates for 2019 iPhone shipments up by about 5 million. He thinks Apple will sell 70 to 75 million units in 2019. And that's a nice little bump up for iPhone. But again, iPhone isn't where a lot of Apple's focus is, right? It's a big mature product. We've talked about this on the Maccast in the past. It's going to continue to sell well, but it's not ever going to be the blockbuster that it used to be. And we know that Apple is sort of pivoting and moving more on to services and other things around iPhone and their products. And I really do think that is the right move to make. And then finally, since the iPhone event, Apple, you know, their marketing team, they coined the term Slofee. And yes, of course, they've now filed for a trademark on that word. How I feel about it? Honestly, I think they can have it because nobody else in the world is ever going to want to use that word. I don't think it was ever being in danger of being infringed upon, even without an official trademark. But, you know, Apple has to do what it does. It's a big company. It needs those trademarks just in case. And I have no doubt that they'll get it. Man, I hate that word, Slofee. I also hate groupie, by the way. I don't know if Apple coined that one. I had not heard it before that announcement, but I think that's terrible as well. But hey, to each their own. Did you know that the iPhone XR actually saved Apple? At least according to the global marketing firm, affiliate marketing firm, Awin. This is a company that tracks affiliate marketing in apps and things like that. They said that they noticed a significant uptick in phones, specifically the iPhone XS model, after launch in all of their analytics, and that model had sold consistently, well since then. And I think there's no doubt about that. I think Apple has talked about this many, many times. Tim Cook has brought it up in quarterly results calls that the iPhone XS was the best-selling phone or iPhone of the iPhone lineup last year. And I think it's a big reason why they produced the iPhone 11 and made it such an amazing phone this year. You know, the successor to the iPhone XR, I think that really is the model that is going to carry the iPhone. Now, I take a little bit of an issue saying that it quote-unquote saved Apple or even saved iPhone, because I don't think Apple was ever in jeopardy. I don't think iPhone sales were ever in big jeopardy. And anybody who listens to this podcast knows that, you know, that's not a big surprise to you. I've always maintained that this is not a problem. iPhone has become a mature product in Apple's product line. It still represents the largest chunk of their revenue for any single product. That is changing and will continue to change. But, you know, saying that the iPhone XR saved Apple, Apple was never in trouble. It didn't need saving. I think that's straight up, easy to say. Another thing that this marketing firm had said in their statement about the iPhone XR was that the average consumer, the reason why it was selling so well was that for the average consumer, the price savings was worth the loss of features. And again, I have a little bit of issue there because I don't think there was a lot of feature loss either, right? You had the single camera, you had the LCD versus, you know, the OLED and the dual cameras. But I think for most consumers, those weren't really big deals. And I think the reason for that is that many users were upgrading from something much older to the iPhone XR, and the XR was a lot of phone. No doubt it had a lot of great technology, and it was actually a huge enhancement, a huge improvement over what they had. So I think they were looking at really gaining a lot of really big features. And like I said, of course, the iPhone XR is great for Apple. It's also very profitable for Apple. So again, another big reason why they are going with the iPhone 11, and I fully expect the iPhone 11 to be in the same boat this year. It is going to be Apple's top selling phone of the year, hands down. It will outsell the 10, the 11, excuse me, the 11 Pro and the 11 Pro Max. You can mark my words on that. I guarantee it. And unfortunately, Apple doesn't share individual numbers anymore. It never really shared individual model numbers, so we'll only have to speculate on it. But once we start seeing numbers from analysts and people who look at this stuff, the iPhone 11 is going to be big. And the only other thing from the numbers that this marketing firm posted that I think actually does show something interesting and is significant was that their data showed that Apple gained brand share against both Samsung and Google in 2019. So iPhone actually becoming more popular and grabbing some brand share from Samsung and Google, which is very significant. And I think, again, it's going to reflect in some of the stuff we talked about earlier with iPhone 11 being a really good seller for Apple this year. And by iPhone 11, I mean the whole lineup, iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro, and 11 Pro Max. Of course, we're going to have to wait till Apple has their quarterly results call, you know, at the end of the holiday shopping season. But no doubt those numbers are going to be, you know, pretty good, I think, again, in comparison to iPhone sales in past years. Remember, we're caveating all of this before I get emails with the fact that iPhone sales are kind of right where they're going to be. You know, it's not going to burn up the charts in terms of growth. It's going to be either flat or a little bit reduced. I don't expect a really big bump up, maybe a small bump up year over year, but nothing massive. Apple made a small change to App Store billing this week. They added a grace period for apps that require a subscription. And the idea is that you won't lose access to the app or its services if there's some sort of momentary issue with your payment. So if you forget to update your credit card information, maybe it's not expired and you get a decline, you're not going to lose access to your app. They're going to give you a little bit of time to resolve that so you don't get logged out. You can continue to use the app. The features you paid for will still work while everything is getting sorted. Now, that grace period is going to vary depending upon the terms of the subscription, but basically you get a 6-day grace period on weekly subscriptions and a 16-day grace period on longer subscriptions. So if it renews every month, you have up to 16 days to kind of get that resolved. And that will help get emails out to people. You can figure out, oops, I know what went wrong. Let me update that information. It's good for the consumers. It's also good for the developer because they're going to continue to get their revenue without interruption if that successful payment is made within the grace period. So if that gets resolved, developers still get paid, you get to still use your apps, and everybody is happy. So I think that's a nice little enhancement. Frankly, I'm surprised that that wasn't part of the process already. You know, just getting cut off, especially as we move to more and more subscription-based apps, that's not a really good thing. Because you know what? Things happen. People miss payments. Credit cards, you know, get declined or maybe stolen and you forget to update it because you got a new card. All of that stuff happens. This is real life. And so it's good that Apple is adapting their policies to reflect that. Also want to talk about one other kind of thing related to billing and payments, not necessarily for the App Store, but related to Apple Pay and Apple Card specifically. Apple Card has expanded the retailers that will give you 3% back, and they added Walgreens. So you can now use your Apple Card at Walgreens and get 3% cash back on any Apple Pay, Apple Card purchases made at Walgreens. And so it's nice to see them expanding the retailers that they're working with. They're going to continue to do that from what we've heard. So more and more, you should be able to get more daily cash, more cash back at more places as they expand this program. You may know that Goldman Sachs is the bank that Apple partnered with for the Apple Card, but they also do analysis and have analysts, and their analysts are a little bit concerned about Apple TV and how it, or Apple TV Plus rather, and how it may affect iPhone sales. Goldman Sachs pointed out this week that Apple does not record all revenue from iPhone sales as hardware revenue. That's because they treat the iPhone as hardware plus software bundle. And what they do is they take the costs of the free services that are often offered with an iPhone, like your free iCloud storage, and apply that revenue to services, taking it away from the revenue of the iPhone. So this year, Goldman Sachs has a big concern about Apple giving away a free year of Apple TV Plus, which they say is essentially valued at about $60 US, meaning that it would take $60 away from the revenue Apple would earn for iPhone on the hardware sales side. And they're saying this would have a significant impact on Apple's iPhone hardware revenue numbers, and that that could cause investors to, you know, kind of freak out. Goldman Sachs actually thinks it could make Apple's stock have up to a 20% downkick. And since we're talking about financial things and stock, I do have to give you a little bit of a disclosure. One, don't take any advice from me. I'm not a stock person or an analyst. And also, I do own a little bit of Apple stock as part of my retirement plan. So just a little bit, not very significant, but there you have it. There's your disclosure. But getting back to Goldman Sachs, they say, yep, it could affect Apple's stock price. Whether it will or not is up for debate. Personally, I find it hard to believe that Apple's going to have any trouble with revenue from iPhones this year or from their services. And I think, again, smart analysts or smart investors will recognize that Apple is pivoting to a bigger focus on their services. So if their services numbers are going up and iPhone is remaining pretty steady or even declining a little bit, I don't think that would cause them to freak out. And as a matter of fact, Apple responded directly to this report from Goldman Sachs, saying that they do not expect Apple TV Plus to have a, quote, material impact on their financial results. So there you have it from Apple. They're not really worried about it. I'm not worried about it. But of course, analysts can often have a different opinion. And keeping with Apple TV Plus, we did have quite a bit of Apple TV Plus news this week. First, let's start off with a deal that never really happened. Apple tried to, and you may remember this, do a deal with J.J. Abrams and his Bad Robot company. They were trying to get access to his content, bring him on board to produce shows for Apple TV. The problem was that they actually wanted exclusivity. Well, we heard a little bit more about this deal this week and why Apple ultimately didn't win it. Bad Robot actually turned down a lot more money from Apple. They were offering about double what the winner, Warner Media, was. Apple reportedly offered $500 million, but Abrams and Bad Robot decided to stick with Warner Media because they wanted to be able to produce shows for other services. That was one of the big sticking points. Apple wanted exclusivity. The reports also say that Apple's terms would have limited Abrams and his ability to do projects for other studios, and that there was some concern over Apple's lack of original IP that could be adapted into shows or films. With other companies, say like Paramount, they can offer up Abrams Star Trek, say, or maybe Disney, Star Wars, and those are things that he has worked on and he likes to work on. There was concerns with Apple that those opportunities would not be there to adapt that kind of content. And finally, there were also concerns over Apple's lack of a theatrical distribution model, which is important if you want to, say, have your films up for Oscar awards and those sorts of things. So for all of those reasons, they were willing to take a lot less money and go a different route. And all of those details sort of surfaced this week. That doesn't mean that Abrams isn't working with Apple. Of course, he was at the Apple announcement of Apple TV Plus, and that's because he is making some shows for them. He is working on Little Voice, My Glory Was, I Had Such Friends, and an adaptation of the Stephen King model, Lissy's Story. So he's already got three projects with Apple. He's not exclusive at Warner Media, so he will be able to make other shows, and I would expect he will continue to make some of those for Apple TV Plus. Another thing that happened this week, somewhat related to Apple TV, or more correctly, I think, related to Apple's deeper involvement in shows and content around Apple TV Plus, Disney's Bob Iger, who has been on Apple's board for the past 8 years, has stepped down. He has left the board. These details came out in a SEC filing. I have to say, not very surprising, despite the fact that Iger kind of gave the impression back in April that he could still stay on the board. He said he was always very careful to recuse himself at board meetings when the subject of Apple TV or Apple's content came up. But it looks like with Apple's latest push and the announcements, he has decided it's probably easier just to step away. And we don't know if this was something that was purely his decision or Apple's decision, or a joint thing. He does like working with, or did enjoy working with, Apple. We know that from several statements. Tim Cook and Iger were seen together many times. They appeared to be pretty good friends, but a lot had speculated that this would happen, and it did. So again, not surprising, but just a bit of news. A little bit sad to see the breakup. I think I saw some reports later that many felt that had Steve Jobs still been around, because they had a deeper relationship because of Disney's relationship with Pixar, that it's possible there would have been a merger. And I've also had several of you mentioned to me, and I think we talked about it on the show, the idea of Apple TV Plus and Disney Plus coming together under sort of one bundle. And I wouldn't rule that out as something that couldn't happen in the future. I think Apple and Disney's relationship remains strong. I think they're connected in a lot of ways, especially culturally and also just with their histories. So I have a feeling they'll keep doing things together, even though they're going to be somewhat competing on this streaming, you know, streaming television, streaming media front. And Apple's bringing out Apple TV Plus on November 1st. I think Disney Plus comes out not long after that, on the 15th. I think they have slightly staggered release dates. But I guess since they're going to have competing services, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for the CEO of Disney to stay on Apple's board. It was just going to get messy, I think, ultimately. And so I think this is the right decision. And then finally, with Apple TV Plus, we're starting to hear about more shows. Apple, you know, they're launching with a slate of, I think, 7 or 8 shows, and they did promise that they're going to be bringing more. We've known about a lot of stuff that's in production that didn't make the cut for the launch on November 1st, and we continue to hear about new shows that are coming up. So I wanted to cover some of those because there were about 3 of them we heard about this week. The first one is El Gato Negro, which is actually based on a Mexican comic book coming from Robert Rodriguez. He is going to direct and executive produce, and also Diego Boneta. He is going to produce and star in the series. We also heard about Shantaram, a series based on the novels by Gregory David Roberts. The story focuses on a convict named Lynn who escapes from an Australian prison and flees to the city of Bombay. It's going to star Charlie Hunnam, who starred in Sons of Anarchy, King Arthur, The Legend of the Sword, and Pacific Rim. And then finally, The Mosquito Coast, which is based on the novel by Paul Theroux, it is going to be a new series on Apple TV and will star Justin Theroux. Yep, you didn't hear that wrong. Justin is actually Paul's nephew, so there's a relation there. Mosquito Coast was actually done as a movie in the 1980s. If you're of my age, you may remember that. It starred Harrison Ford, River Phoenix, and Helen Mirren. This is the same book, the same story, and it is the story of a brilliant inventor, Ali Fox, who takes his family to live in the Honduran jungle, determined to build a better civilization, to be an example for the world. So it's an interesting movie if you haven't seen it, the 80s version, and it should make a pretty interesting Apple TV show. So some great new content, Apple picking up and turning into some shows. And again, I continue to very much look forward to Apple TV Plus. I'm even more looking forward to it, as I mentioned in the last show, because I get my first year free, and I think there's going to be some great content on there. It does really look that Apple is doing what they said they would and focusing on quality, not necessarily quantity. And I think they put it at the right price point to slot in and sort of fill in for other content you might have. Many people have said they're sort of taking the HBO model versus the Amazon Netflix model. And I tend to agree with that a little bit, although, you know, HBO does have some back catalog stuff. They get other movies that sort of rotate through. Apple's not doing that sort of thing. All of their stuff is original, and it is somewhat limited. It's going to be rolling out slowly, but I think it's going to pick up steam very, very quickly as well. I kind of see it like the App Store was, right? There wasn't a lot of stuff there at first, but there was some good stuff, and then it just sort of blew up from there. Where the difference comes into play is I don't think we're going to end up with content coming from, well, obviously we're not ending up with content coming from everywhere because Apple is highly curating it and really focusing on that quality. So that's going to be the plus side of it. But I would never expect it to have a huge back catalog. Well, never say never, right? They could always do some sort of deal. And I did think I read that AT&T is looking to sell DirecTV. So that might be something that Apple could look into. Not necessarily a content play, but there's some relationships there where they could get access to maybe some back catalog and some content. So I don't think that's something they're interested in doing with Apple TV Plus today, but maybe in the future. Who knows? And then finally, in the news for this week, we did get a leaked image, again, from Sunny Dixon of what could be the next iPad. We are expecting Apple to have an iPad Pro event probably in October, and we would expect to see some new specs, including probably the tri-lens camera system that we saw on the iPhone 11. And that's what this image was. Dixon says it's a design mock-up and not an actual product. The lens is the three camera lens, but it's oriented a little bit differently on this one. It's actually in a square, so it looks like a four on a six-sided die with one dot in kind of each corner. So you've got the three lenses kind of making an L shape across the top and down the left-hand side, and then in the lower right-hand corner is the other dot, the True Tone flash. And we did see some mock-ups like that prior to the iPhone 11 announcement, or the 11 Pro announcement rather. And again, I think this just tends to be a early mock-up. I would fully expect if we get a tri-lens camera system, it's going to be the same sensor, the same orientation on the iPad. And I do think Apple will, in the iPad Pro, put that lens system in there. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. The only thing I didn't like about this mock-up, if you look at it, well, two things. One, it didn't have the cover glass over the lenses. But again, I think that was just because it was a mock-up. But it also had a square metal frame that just sort of stuck up straight edge around, almost looking like a little pie pan or something like that, or a baking pan with the lenses just kind of plopped in the middle of it. And the whole thing looked like it was just plopped on the back. That, you know, as ugly as the camera bump is on the iPhone 11, and I know many of you like it, that's fine. This is just my opinion. I want to point this out. I think it's not that attractive. I reserve judgment, though, until I actually see it in person. Maybe it won't be quite as bad as it looks like in the images. I think it'll look better with a case on there, too, but I'm not a huge fan. That's just me. But the thing about this one on the iPad was it doesn't have that sort of nice, graceful, tapered edge. You know, with the one on the iPhone, Apple built it into the glass, so it's all kind of one seamless piece. With the iPad, because the iPads are expected to continue to have the metal back, they're not going to have that luxury. So the question becomes, are they going to do it like the current model where there is kind of a little bit of rounding, or is it just going to literally be this sort of square, straight edge thing? I hope they give it a little more graceful transition than what is seen in this mock-up. And we should find out maybe coming up in October. But with that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a moment and thank a couple show sponsors, starting out with Mint Mobile. Hey, are you interested in saving on your cell phone bill? Mint Mobile is a great way to do it. They do it by saving on a lot of the overhead, not having retail locations, and basically passing those savings directly on to you. They provide the same premium network coverage that you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost, and that's because they do everything online without the overhead. They also give you all the services and features that you need without having a lot of the extras, allowing them to cut down on costs and pass those savings on to you. For example, why would you pay for a bunch of data that you never use? A lot of services give you these massive data plans you're not using that much. Mint Mobile offers plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of data starting as low as $15 a month. Yeah, $15 a month, and that does include unlimited nationwide talk, text, and, get this, hotspot. That is something you typically have to pay a lot more for. It's included with your Mint Mobile plan. I've been using Mint Mobile, and the coverage and performance is great. Not really surprising since they use T-Mobile's network for their service. You can bring your own device to the network, and you can even keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contracts. And they make sign up super easy. They sent me a SIM. You activate it online. I did the whole process. All I had to do was pop in the SIM. Everything just worked right out of the box. I was up and running in minutes. It was pop in the SIM, go online, activate, boom, had my new Mint Mobile phone, and the service has been great. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/maccast. That's mintmobile.com/maccast. Cut your wireless bill down to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/maccast. And a big thank you to them for their support of the Maccast. I'd also like to thank Masterclass for their support of the Maccast. You know, if you have not checked out Masterclass yet, what are you waiting for? I am a huge fan. I am loving every course that I've taken and watched on Masterclass. They just have this amazing depth and variety of courses taught by the masters in their fields. You really can't get access to this kind of talent any place else. I've recently been taking Neil Gaiman's course on writing. I know you think writing, well, I'm using it to help try and improve my podcast. He's teaching writing, but like many of the creative courses on Masterclass, it's more about the creative process. Yes, he gets into some technical writing stuff, but hey, we could all benefit from better writing as well. But what's translating for me is all of the lessons learned about creating content. And I most recently watched a lesson called Rules for Writers. And again, for me, it was really about rules for creators. Things like you need to keep producing content. And if you create content, finish it. Don't just start it. Finish it. And once you finish it, get it out into the world. And once it's out in the world, get ready, because guess what? You're going to get rejected. You're going to get bad feedback. I get nasty emails all the time, but don't let that get you down. Keep iterating, keep putting more stuff out there, and stick with it. Lessons like that that I think are really important and inspiring to hear. And another thing that I really like about how Masterclass is put together is most of the classes I take feel very intimate. They feel like they are just teaching to you. It's a classroom of one. I think my daughter, who's also taking a bunch of the courses in the writing area because she's an aspiring writer, put it very succinctly. And yes, she's enjoying Masterclass very much as well. She says, you know, they're inspiring and informative. And I think that's really the key. And you have all of that wrapped up in an amazingly well put together, highly produced video courses, some of the best I've ever seen. And there's a lot of good stuff out there, so that is saying a lot. They're presented in great small chunks, so the lessons within a course tend to be 10 to 15 minutes, so you can easily fit them into a busy schedule. And they make that even easier by the fact that you can access them on any device, iPhone, iPad, Mac, even Apple TV, which is one of my favorite ways to watch them. You can get it all right there and pick up right where you left off. So you can start a course, go through a couple lessons, and then pick up someplace else. And while you can buy courses individually on Masterclass, I think having the all-access pass is really what you want, because what happens inevitably is you're taking one course. You're looking at something like documentary filmmaking with Ken Burns, and then you see a cooking class. Aaron Franklin did this great cooking series on smoking stuff, and I love ribs. He did a smoked pork rib thing. I am ready to make these things. And he covered stuff I never would have thought about, like trimming the meat, and I learned how important that is to the process. I've never done that before when I'm cooking ribs. You just throw them on the grill, right? No, you can actually improve your skills. And without the all-access pass, that might have been a lesson that I skipped by and didn't get to enjoy. They have over 60 classes now, and they are constantly adding more, so I think it's a great investment in learning. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as a MacCast listener, get 15% off the annual All Access Pass. Go to masterclass.com/MacCast. That's masterclass.com/MacCast for 15% off Masterclass. And a huge thank you to Masterclass for their support of the show. Over the years, I think I have shared with you many an iPhone order day experience. Ordering iPhones has been a, I was going to say up and down process, but many times a very frustrating and down process over the years. More recently, it's gotten a little bit better, but I wanted to again share my experience this year in ordering Apple's iPhone 11 Pro. And I have to say, hands down, the best ordering experience I have had to date. I'm not really sure at this point Apple could really top it. Now, I did do my homework. I did a little bit of setup ahead of time, got myself ready. And for those of you who maybe didn't have as great an ordering experience this year, there may be a few little tips here in here for you for the next time you order. There's always going to be hiccups. There's always going to be bumps. I know that my experience is not necessarily indicative of everybody's experience, but if you want to share your experience, good, bad, or otherwise, send me an email, or even better, send me a quick audio clip sharing your experience. I only ask that you try and keep it brief, maybe 2 to 3 minutes, and we can share some of those experiences on future episodes of the MacCast. But I'm going to share mine with you. The prep work that I did that I think is really important is, one, if you are on an iPhone payment program and you don't plan to trade in your phone like I was, go ahead and make sure you pay that off in advance. So I paid off my existing payment plan. I'm actually going to hand down my phone, so I wanted to keep it. I'm not turning it in as part of the upgrade process. And so I did that, but then that also meant that I was going to be signing up for a new payment program or a new upgrade program. And I went ahead and did all of that stuff in advance. You can do it through the Apple Store app. And so I went in there, I got my pre-approval for the iPhone upgrade program, I chose the phone model that I was going to have, I picked the carrier, I did all of that stuff in advance. So I picked the model, picked the storage size, picked the carrier, everything that I wanted, and then I was able to say, yep, I want to get this on the iPhone upgrade program, and I had to go through a new approval process, but I got pre-approval and had everything waiting to go. And I had to do that again because I wasn't continuing with the existing program. If you're on an existing program, there were options for that as well. You could say, yep, I'm using the upgrade program, and go through the whole process. So you can preset all of this stuff up before the actual launch day. So I was doing this, I think, on Wednesday. The phone was going on sale Friday morning, 5 a.m. Pacific time. So I had this all set. About the only downside to me paying off my existing plan and having to reapply for a new loan is probably that I got my credit dinged again, which isn't always fun, but anytime you're signing up for a credit program, you have to be willing and able to understand that that is going to happen. So I was all set, and then what happened on order day was pretty straightforward and really quick. 5 a.m. or a little before 5 a.m., I woke up, I set my alarm, I had the Apple Store app up and running on my iPhone. Apple actually had a little animation. I don't know if you can leave that up and running. I always worry about it, so I'm doing the what I call the App Store iPhone launch day shuffle. I am launching the app, seeing if the store is up, and I start doing this 1 or 2 minutes before the scheduled time, so about 2 minutes before 5 a.m. Pacific time. I'm opening the app. Nope, it's not up. I close the app. I go into the app manager. I actually close it all the way down by swiping up, and then I launch the app again. Lather, rinse, repeat. Keep doing that. Keep doing that. Keep doing that. So 5 a.m. hit, launched it, wasn't running. It took about 30 seconds or so before the app actually came up. But then the minute it came up, what I had was a button. Hey, do you want to order your iPhone now? Click here. I tapped, it might have been a link. I don't remember if it was a button or a link. Things were moving fast, folks. So I tapped on it, It went right in. It said, pay with Face ID, which I already had my Apple Pay card in there, all of that set up. Another bit of advice, make sure your credit card information is all up to date inside the app. Do that ahead of time. So I had made sure that I had the card ready to go. It was my new Apple card, so it was all ready to go. I tapped buy. I did Face ID for Apple Pay, and boom, the order was complete. It was done. I had my confirmation in less than 60 seconds. It was amazing. 5:01, and I had the order confirmation there on my phone. It did take a little while longer to get the actual email, but I knew everything was good to go, and I was done. Again, I know not everybody had the same experience, but a lot of folks I talked to did have about as seamless as an experience. I think really the key is that pre-setup. Go in and pre-select your phone, pre-select all your options, take care of all your payment stuff, make sure that's ready to go. And it seems like if you do that and if you use the Apple Store app, you can have a smooth buying experience. Apple has nailed it at this point. No servers going down, no other issues. It was awesome. In case you're wondering what I went for, I did go for a midnight green 256 gigabyte model. So the middle storage option, I didn't want to pay the premium for the 512, especially considering the fact that I'm barely using 64 gigabytes right now on my existing iPhone. So I didn't need a big jump up in storage. I could stick with that middle level model. And I am getting the 11 Pro, not the 11 Pro Max, because as you know, I am a gigantophone bigot. I hate the large phones. I know, again, that many of you like them, and more power to you. I'm not bashing that phone. It is a great phone, and I know a lot of people like the extra screen real estate. It's just not for me. I need something a little more pocketable, and even the iPhone 11, I think, is in that weird spot in between where it's just a little bit too big. I kind of wish Apple would do a version of the iPhone 11 model in a slightly smaller size. I think that would sell like gangbusters, but my assumption is they don't want to do that because it might undercut sales of the premium phone. And to be honest, if there was a 5.8 inch iPhone 11, I might have went for it. Maybe, almost. The really big thing that I'm looking forward to in this upgrade is the move from the dual lens camera system to the triple lens camera system. So I think I actually would have stuck with the Pro this year. But had the camera not really changed, I probably would have opted to save the money, because dang, the iPhone 11 Pros are expensive. I still think they're way overpriced for a lot of people, but that's the world we live in. We don't have many options when it comes to premium phones, especially if we want an Apple product, right? Yeah, we get two. So that's what I ordered. I also did order a new case because my tried and true trusty Apple brown leather case that I used on my iPhone X and my iPhone XS is no longer going to work with the new camera bump, so I needed a new case. This time around, I went with a new color. I really liked the yellow iPhone 11. That's the color I probably would have opted for if I bought one of those, so I got the next best thing, which was a Meyer Lemon leather case. And I'm excited about that. About the only thing I'm worried about is how that color might wear. What was nice about the saddle brown leather one is it got this great patina over time. I love the look of mine. I'm actually kind of sad that I have to give it up. It has worn so nicely like leather does. I have a feeling the yellow after a year or two might look a little bit grungy. Yeah, I might need to invest in some saddle soap or something like that to clean that up. We'll have to see. I might have to try to keep it fresh and new, or at least as fresh and new as possible. But that's what I ended up ordering. That was my experience. Did you order a new iPhone? Did you not? Give me some feedback. Let me know how your experiences went. And if you didn't order one, you know, maybe tell us why you decided to opt out this year. There's a lot of good reasons for that, and I'm sure other folks would like to hear your story in the community. Shoot me an email, audiocomment@maccast.gmail.com. Ready to strap in? Yeah, we're going to have to get a little bit ranty again about the Apple TV app. I know we've done this in the past, but hey, folks, it's not getting any better. And this week I received specifically some feedback from a listener that really reminded me how much of an issue this is. Actually, I get reminded about this every time I launch the Apple TV app at night when I'm just trying to relax and find something to watch. But Ken wrote in to share his recent experience, and I think it's kind of indicative of this problem. And I don't want to really have a ranty conversation about this. What I really want to have is a community conversation about this. Am I being crazy? Is Ken being crazy and thinking that this is an issue? I think it kind of is, because I think at one point Apple kind of promised to change our TV experience for the better. And I feel like we were heading in that direction, and then the rug kind of got pulled out from under us. And I understand the economic reasons why, but as a consumer, as a user of the product, I am a little bit miffed and a little bit baffled by it. But here's what happened to Ken. He was going in to watch some TV content that he had purchased through iTunes. So he says, I buy a lot of TV shows on iTunes. I like to watch them. I went into the TV app. I had been watching some of the episodes that I own. And then a day later, I went into another device, launched the TV app, and sure enough, as expected, there was the next episode in the Up Next section, ready to go. And I thought, all right, I'll start watching that next episode. Pressed play, started playing, no problem. But then ads started popping up, and he thought, that's a little bit odd, because this is my purchase content. Has Apple changed their policy? Are they injecting ads into my paid for purchased content? And no, of course they weren't. What really happened was the TV app had actually linked him to a version of the show that was through a channel on Amazon Prime, and it had ads. So he wasn't watching his purchased content. He was actually watching stuff through Amazon Prime. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't think Up Next brings in any content from your purchase shows. I could be wrong on that, Ken. So I'm not really sure how that happened there, but I think it does illustrate a huge point and a big problem with the TV app. If it was doing that, the problem is you had started out watching purchase content, and now it's throwing you into content that maybe you have access to, but is not the ideal version, or not the version that you really want to be watching, right? There should be some sort of hierarchy of, okay, if I own it and it was purchased through iTunes, that's like number one. That's where I want to get it. And I've seen this with movies as well. There's certain movies that have been recommended to me that I actually own, and I'd rather play the version, you know, the nice HD or now even 4K version that was purchased out of iTunes and in my library. That should be the default. That should be the start. And then you can fall back onto maybe services where I have access to that content, but I don't own it. Some streaming service, maybe Amazon Prime Video, whatever it might be. And then after that, the fallback should be, oh, by the way, you don't own that, but here are some places where you can get it. Either subscribing to another service that you don't already subscribe to, or purchase it through iTunes. And unfortunately, that was the path we were going down. It was kind of working. And then when Apple brought out their new channels that got rid of some of the third-party apps that they had to integrate with, it all went to heck. And I don't really know why Apple made that decision. But what Apple did when they made those decisions was, in my opinion, again, just my opinion, and you're welcome to share yours, they completely ruined the user experience. For me, to the point where I no longer prefer to use the TV app. For the longest time, that was my go-to. I would launch the TV app and I would find the content that I wanted to watch. Now, every time I go in there, or almost every time I go in there to find something, I get some level of frustration, and that makes me sad, because I think Apple had a great opportunity to improve and enhance the consumer experience around television, and it was working. And because of, really, I think there's no other way to say that, it's because of revenue, because of money, they broke that experience. And I don't think it was the right move. I understand it, but I don't think it was the right move. Recommendations for content that I don't own or don't want to buy, in my opinion, are completely useless. I'm happy that they see, hey, you kind of like sci-fi, or you kind of like fantasy stuff. Here's some other shows that you might like. that's fine. I'm good with those recommendations, even if it's in a service that they might have to upsell me on. Where I'm running into a problem with it, though, is that it's the default, not the exception. I want some sort of segregation, and I don't have the answers for this. Originally, it was that content just wasn't there. You would go into the TV app, and it would only show you the apps that you installed, and typically, you would only install the apps for services that you had access to. So it worked really well. Now that they have a bunch of services like Showtime, for example, that I don't own and I don't want to subscribe to, they have a lot of great shows. I'm sure there's content there that I would enjoy, and Apple's recognizing that, hey, you might like these shows. That's a service I don't want. I don't want to pay the money for. I want to block it out. I want some way to say, don't show me Showtime content. I don't care. If I ever want it, I will go find it. We don't get that option anymore. To me, it's like them promoting a killer new feature on a phone that's like not an iPhone. Like, I only want to own an iPhone, and you're going to show me a bunch of really cool killer features on an Android phone, and then you're going to heavy-handedly try and get me to buy that thing. You're going to say, oh, don't you want to buy this? Don't you want to buy this? Look how great this is. Don't you want to buy this? And that's sort of how I feel. Somehow, Apple has managed to turn the TV app into the worst freemium application on iOS. Okay, I guess we are kind of getting ranty at this point. But I'm trying to make a point here. This is not the experience we were promised. This is not the experience that I think most consumers want. I want a way to be able to opt out of the hard sell, or at least I want a way to have recommended content more clearly labeled as, you can't access this content without paying. There should be like a, hey, you don't own this like border or color or flag or something, so I don't click on it and get annoyed. Inevitably, what happens is I get some sort of recommendation and I'm like, oh, that looks like it would be really cool. And I think this is what Apple's hoping for. The problem is they're hoping I'm going to go, oh, that would be really cool, and then I will buy it in terms of a subscription or subscribing to some other channel. I think with subscription overload, that's not likely to happen for most consumers. So it ends up just being this really sort of frustrated experience. Some sort of segmentation maybe of the owned stuff versus the recommended stuff or other stuff that I can access, I think is the key. Exactly how we go about implementing that, I'm not really sure. If it would be siloed in separate tabs, so it's like, here's your recommendations based on the content you have. Here's just a place you can go to see everything that's available to you, regardless of whether or not you already have access to it, whether it's in your library or whether it's a new service that you need to subscribe to. That might work. I don't know. Again, I don't have answers here, but I do know that I have been continually frustrated by the app, and I don't think I am alone in this. I hear from many of you that you're experiencing some of the same frustrations. And please continue to share that information with me. Just another quick thing that really bothers me, because I am an Amazon Prime subscriber. I hate the fact that Amazon content doesn't distinguish between what's available through Prime Video and what's available through Prime Video channels. So just like Apple has channels that you have to pay extra for that they recommend content from, Amazon does the same thing. So in the app, in the TV app, the frustrating part about this is you'll bring up something and it'll say, oh, it's available on Amazon Prime. And you're like, great, I have Amazon Prime Video. I can watch that. Click. No, this is Showtime content. And if you want to watch on Amazon Prime, you have to buy the Showtime channel. And it's like, I could have bought the Showtime channel and that content over in the Apple TV app. Ugh, really, really frustrating. It's like this double whammy, and I get burned by it all the time. And it's just like, don't, I'm so dumb. Why did I do that again? And then you get frustrated. And again, I don't think this is the experience Apple is hoping that we're going to have with their TV app. Frustration shouldn't be the end point. It should be, wow, I'm enjoying this really great content inside this really great experience. The whole point was the TV app was supposed to simplify and unify the TV experience. And I feel like now all it's really doing is frustrating and fragmenting that experience. Okay. So That's the experience as it exists today. I'm hoping it'll change back at some point. Maybe it'll get better when we have Apple TV Plus. I don't know. I'm not holding my breath. But in case you are getting frustrated by this sort of maze of content, I will share with you one tip, something that has helped me kind of navigate it a little bit better to get out of the maze. It doesn't solve the problem, but maybe you're not clicking on content so much that you actually can't watch. So if you're in the TV app and you see some show that's being recommended to you, either in the Up Next or just the recommendations, and you click on it and it goes to that big pretty page where it's got a big image of some of the show's content and it's got a bunch of information about who's in the show, there's usually a big blue button over to the right that says something like play or play episode or play first episode, something like that, depending upon the content. Do not click on that button. That is where you might get into trouble. Actually, what you want to do is scroll down the page to the how to watch section, and there it will show you every service and every way that is available for you to access that content, including if it's coming from your iTunes library or if it's coming from Hulu that you already subscribe to, or if it's going to be HBO where you have to pay for it, or it's going to have to be a rental on iTunes where you have to pay for it. You will have all of them laid out for you and you can pick the correct one. This would also, I think, solve your problem, Ken, where you got the wrong version of the show. So that might help you. Again, I think you still have to go into the TV section, or into your library, into the TV section in your library to actually access your shows. But maybe they are still in Up Next. I just don't remember. So I'm going to take your word for it that that's what happened. And this might be a way for you to actually work around that. So give that a try. Or you can do what I just did, which is just give up and go back to the individual apps when you want to find the content for that. The problem there is you have to remember which shows are in which app. You know, this is in Netflix, this is in Amazon Prime, this is in Hulu. I just completely avoid the TV app more and more lately, which is just really sad. It makes me not happy because I think the TV app could be an amazing thing. I still go in there from time to time, but more and more it's just to see what's there and then like, oh yeah, I know that's over on Hulu, so I'll launch the Hulu app, go over there, and I don't get that unified experience. No, I'm not bitter. Why do you ask? Yeah, sorry. I told you it was going to get ranty, and then I told you it wasn't, and then it did, and now I'm apologizing. So you get my point. And again, I know I'm not alone, so send me some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. Let's go to a more positive note to end the show. What do you think? Yeah, I think we should get all gushy and mushy on Apple, because I have something that I have fallen completely in love with, and I thought it was going to happen, and it did. I am having a love affair right now with Apple Arcade, and the reason is, you might be going, Adam, it's not out yet. It's coming out on Friday. Yeah, I lucked out and got early beta access. Actually, if you're on the beta of iOS 13, it sounds like you can get access to Apple Arcade. I read an article where it said it was being randomly selected, but I've seen a lot more people getting it, so maybe it was just a slow rollout. Regardless, getting to try out Apple Arcade, paying for it, $4.99 a month. I signed up. I'm actually on the free month trial, and it is amazing. I can say it's amazing, and I'm not even a heavy gamer, as you might know, but I like playing casual games. I like playing games from time to time. And having a handful of titles, 64 right now is the current sample that's up there, and they're adding more all the time that I can just look at, see one that interests me, and click get and play, has been amazing. The titles, everything that I've looked at so far, each one of them has been unique. It's been innovative, extremely well designed, plays extremely well, visually amazing and engaging, and I think most of all, just a bunch of fun. I've tried a bunch of different genres, you know, not every app, just a handful of them at this point, but I can tell you that every title that I have tried has been quality. This is top-notch stuff from some amazing developers, and Apple really did a great job selecting those developers and putting this together. What's also great is because it's a paid-for service, no in-app purchase, no constantly being haggled or nagged to buy gems and this, that, and the other with real cash, you get everything, all the features, full-featured applications, no microtransactions, no in-app purchases, and it's incredible. And I think because of that, because developers don't have the pressure of trying to get more money out of you through in-app purchase and microtransactions and loot boxes and all that garbage, I think the gameplay is better and the results are stunning. I think developers not having to focus on that part of it, which is really marketing, gets them to the place where all they have to focus on is making great games with really great gameplay and compelling content. And I think it shows. I ran across one title on the applications that does actually have a quote-unquote store, but it uses currency that you earn during gameplay to let you buy more levels and more content. It's actually an in-game element. It's a reward system for playing the game and doing well in the game, and it makes the game more fun. It's not an oppressive, soul-crushing punishment system that says, I am going to block you from playing or enjoying this game until you give me money or buy gems or a loot box or upgrade your stuff with real cash. It's not like that at all. It's a reward system that drives the gameplay, and that's the kind of creativity that I'm talking about. You go in there and you're like, oh, I want to go play more so I can earn more ink so that I can buy these other books in the store so I can get more content so I can enjoy the game more. It's really a lot of fun. And that game, by the way, is called Dear Reader. Some of the other titles that I've tried so far, Sayonara Wild Hearts, which I think was one of the ones that they demoed, great sound, very fast-paced game, a lot of fun, very challenging. It works with an MFI game controller, which is great. I'm enjoying that part of it. I've also tried Patterned, Shinsky Deep Sea, I think that's how you say it, the underwater one, and again, another one they showed off at the event. Tint, Hot Lava, Where Cards Fall, which is the one from Snowman, which I was very much looking forward to and was worried when it got pulled into Apple Arcade because that was going to be a release on iOS. And then it was like, oh, no, you're only going to be able to get it through Apple Arcade. Well, because of the pricing, I have a feeling that game alone would have been a $5 to $10 game. And now you have it as part of the $4.99 a month subscription. And I think this is just an incredible value, even if you are not a huge game player. Now, everything isn't perfect. There are some very, very minor, what I would call, and almost hesitate to call, downsides. One is that not all titles seem to support external game controllers. Several do, but I had kind of figured many would because of the Apple TV. And I haven't been able to try it on the Apple TV yet. It's not been enabled for that. Right now, it's just enabled on iOS devices. So I can't speak very much to the TV experience, but I expect it to be pretty good. I think it would be better with a game controller. I'm not a huge fan of playing games with Apple's remote. I think it's okay, but it's not really great. I'll probably try playing them mostly with the remote on my iPhone because you get a little more real estate for swiping and stuff like that. So again, I'll have to let you know in the future how that experience goes. But, you know, minor complaint there. And then the only other thing is I could see storage on our devices once again becoming an issue because some of these titles do actually run in the 1 gigabyte plus range. So download 16 titles and you've just downloaded potentially 16 gigabytes worth of content. And you do download the titles, which might sound like a disadvantage, but the advantage there is just like the App Store, you have these on your device. They're not going to be reliant on being connected to the internet. Now, some do have connections needed for some of the gameplay, but overall, these are standalone games. You can take them with you. You don't own them, obviously, because it's a subscription service, but you can have as many on your phone as you can fit in terms of the storage. So overall, there is great value here. I do think the value is real, even if you're a moderate level game player. If you're really, really just a casual game player, you're not really into games, they don't excite you very much, then definitely it's Apple Arcade. It's not a service probably for you. But I do think there are some gamers who might be more casual gamers who will convert into maybe mid to moderate level game players if they had this service, if you had access to this great content, because I think it is very compelling. And a lot of us like games, right? Games are fun to play on our iPads and iPhones. So there you have it. I'm loving the service. There are a few other sort of business concerns that I have and just overall ecosystem concerns that I have that I did want to bring up with you and get your opinion on. One thing I'm concerned about is, what does this do to titles that are outside Apple Arcade? Because I have a feeling, just in my few days of playing with it, that this is going to be the first place I go to look for a new game. I won't be necessarily going to the Games tab in the App Store anymore, because, hey, here's a bunch of quality titles that are being added to all the time. It's a growing library that I just have access to and I don't have to pay anything more for. What does that do to the other ecosystem? How do other apps that are not invited into Apple Arcade, and right now it is invite only, Apple has to bring these in, how are they going to compete? And I think in my mind, the best case scenario is that developers see that, hey, there are a lot of people signing up for Apple Arcade. These are people who probably don't like in-app purchase. They don't like premium. They're willing to pay, obviously, if they're buying a subscription service, to play games. Maybe I should be targeting that market. Maybe I should be focusing more on the gameplay, making a really great, compelling game, selling it for a set price, and I can get some of these people who are getting more into games to buy my title as well. And I think that's sort of Apple's hope with this, is that they can showcase really great games that don't have a lot of what I feel are kind of these oppressive mechanisms in them, and that will convert more people into people who are willing to pay for and buy great games. That would be the best case scenario, in my opinion. Worst case scenario is that it pushes some game developers out of the App Store, they just give up, or that others more heavily adopt the freemium model, making their stuff free and adding even more in-app purchase and freemium stuff to make back the revenue. So I hope it's not the latter. I hope we don't end up with sort of this bifurcation of, here's all the junky freemium, low quality stuff over here, and only the good stuff is in Apple Arcade. I don't think that's going to be ultimately good for game developers. I don't think it's ultimately going to be good for iPhone and Apple. So I'm hoping that's not what happens, but potentially could. The other side of this is, I also have concerns for the developers, as there seems to be a lot of unanswered questions for how they actually make money if they are part of Arcade. Is this thing sustainable? We know that up front, Apple partnered with some developers, even providing funding in some cases so that they could actually develop their games, which is great. But what happens with the subscription revenue? How does that get divided up? How much does Apple keep? How much goes to the developers? And I think even more importantly, how does each developer get their portion of that money? How is that pool shared? Is it divided equally? My guess is probably not. Is it done by downloads of the game? You know, how many installs happen? Maybe. Is it done by the amount of time people spend actually in-game playing? That could be a possibility as well. We really don't know. And what happens when the number of titles grows? That revenue pot is going to get divided up even more. So is there going to be this kind of competition for that money? And how does that affect developers within that ecosystem as well? I don't really know the answers to these questions. Apple hasn't shared a lot of details. I'm hoping as Apple Arcade rolls out and more developers are able to talk about the process, that we'll get some of those details. And we certainly will continue to talk about them here on the MacCast. But what are your opinions on this? Have you had a chance to play Apple Arcade? What do you think of the titles? And what about some of these concerns that I have? Do you have some similar ones, or have you thought of other things that maybe we haven't discussed here? Again, shoot me some feedback, send me an email. Best of all, audio comments. I love those because we can share your voice on the show. Send those to maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, or if you want to provide me some feedback on anything that I talked about, shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, MacCast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. Leave a voicemail there. If you do want to send in an audio comment, doesn't have to be anything really complicated. Use the voice recorder on your iPhone, attach it to an email, and that's all you really need to do. Or, again, just use the voicemail line. You can leave voicemail, and I can pick it up from there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can check out the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.